It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it's been a couple of decades, more than a couple of decades, I guess, since the Internet first entered our lives. And now that we have a world of knowledge at our fingertips whenever we desire, thanks to our smartphones, our tablets, our PCs, information technology has enhanced our ability to connect to all corners of the globe, as well as to change how we communicate and process information. But to what degree is the Internet perhaps less of a tool and more of a crutch? Here to share his thoughts on how our lives, our thinking has been altered by the digital age, Nicholas Carr, a technology, culture, and economics writer whose work has appeared in The Guardian, The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, other publications as well. His most recent book, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains, was a 2011 Pulitzer Prize nominee and New York Times bestseller. Nicholas Carr, welcome to our program.
Thanks very much.
We want to mention that you will be in Iowa in the coming days. You're going to be speaking at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, Thursday, February 6th at 7 p.m. Let's talk about some of the themes that you cover in your writing. According to a 2013 study by eMarketer, the average user of the Internet spends 23 hours online a week. Now, in your view, how has this access change the way we think and process information?
Well, I think the technology of the Internet and the networked connected computer encourages us to engage in a certain kind of thinking, and I'd describe that as very fast-paced browsing of information, getting as much data and information as possible as quickly as possible, juggling lots of different information and messages, which is a very important way of thinking. But it discourages us from engaging in ways of thinking that require attentiveness. So everything from contemplation to more complex conceptual and critical thinking, which really require you not to take in information quickly, but to step back from the flow of information and think carefully and deeply about what you found. I think those are the types of thinking that we're not practicing as much, thanks to the Internet, not engaging in as much, and as a result, we're becoming less capable of doing that kind of deep, attentive thinking.
How do we measure that? How a society has we as individuals lack this attentiveness, this deep thinking ability?
Well, it's hard to measure it in in hard numbers, as we like to do today, because we don't, you know, if you look at the human brain or you think about your mind, how would we measure the depth of our thought? We don't even know where the quality of thought comes from in terms of the biological working. So it's hard to come up with some definitive readout on that.
I just wanted some evidence that what you're saying is in fact taking place.
Right. And as I lay out in the book, there's all sorts of evidence coming from psychological studies, from studies of the way people behave when they're online, that seem to indicate we're going through this process. So, for instance, if you look at any research into how people act when they're looking at a computer screen, whether it's a laptop or a tablet or a smartphone, you see evidence that they're engaged in skimming and scanning and taking in information quickly. We spend about 10 seconds on average on a web page, for instance, before we click out. If we have a computer running in front of us, we glance at our email inbox something like 30 or 40 times an hour. Mm-hmm. Kids exchange texts. You know, if you add it all up, they're receiving or sending a text something like every 6 minutes during their waking hours. And all of these things are cumulative. And you see it in studies of the way people read online as well. They've actually tracked people's focus, and you see this skimming and scanning behavior. So on the one hand, we have all this evidence that when we're online, and we tend to be online more and more these days, we're not focused on engaging in kind of deep, concentrated thinking, but we're gathering information as quickly as possible. And then when you look about the implications of that kind of behavior for thought, it's pretty clear that that gets in the way of what we at least traditionally have felt to be the deepest forms of thinking. So conceptual thinking, critical thinking, creative thinking.
If you only have so many hours, waking hours in the day to think, it makes sense that if you're skimming and scanning a lot, it pushes away that time for deeper contemplative thinking. I wonder if, you know, when we're scanning web pages, on our mobile device or tablet or whatever. How much of that really, I've wondered, sticks in our brains?
One essential thing we know about our brains is that our short-term working memory, which is essentially the contents of our consciousness, has a very small capacity. You can hold about 3 or 4 or 5 elements of information in mind at a time. And the problem with taking in lots of information very, very quickly and kind of multitasking and juggling data is that nothing sticks in our mind very long. In order to make room for the next thing, next message or alert coming in, something that's already there has to be shoved out. And the problem is that what happens is that that information, that knowledge we're trying to gather, never makes its way over to our long-term memory, because you really have to rehearse information, pay attention to information to form long-term memories about it. And the reason that's a problem is that it's only when we transfer information from our short-term memory to our long-term memory that we create connections and associations with everything we already know. And it's those connections rather than the individual bits of information that form the basis for our highest thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about when you write that when we multitask, we incur switching costs?
Well, the switching costs are actually a little different, although they're related. Switching costs means that when you try to do lots of things at once, if you're a kid doing homework and you're also checking Facebook and texting and stuff and you're juggling these tasks, the mind can't do two things simultaneously, so it has to shift its focus from one thing to another, and that incurs what psychologists call switching costs, which is kind of, just burning mental energy going from one thing to another. And so the higher the pace of multitasking, the more of your thinking, the more of your mental energy goes into switching from one thing to another rather than doing the thing itself.
When you're saying that we aren't doing this deep thinking, unless we consciously are aware of what you're exactly talking about and do engage in deep thinking along with this fast-paced browsing, skimming, scanning activity.
And that's the big challenge, is overcoming what seems to be a very deep primitive desire in ourselves to take in as much information as possible, as quickly as possible, to know everything that's going on around us. And we've always had that instinct, but now we've kind of surrounded ourselves with this digital environment where there's no end of new stuff coming at us. The big challenge is, how do we back away from the flow of information to practice some of those calmer, more attentive ways of thinking? And it's certainly possible, but I think it's getting harder and harder. And I certainly feel that in my life, and mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do.
So talk about, what would you suggest in the way of meeting that challenge?
Well, I think the only way to meet it is to actually change our behavior so that we are away from the gadgets and the services and social media for some significant part of our waking hours, and we're practicing more attentive forms of thinking, whether that means, reading a complicated book or listening to a complicated piece of music or having a long conversation with someone without glancing at your smartphone. In a sense, it's kind of a use it or lose it type of mm-hmm. situation where if you don't practice these things, your mind becomes less capable of doing it. And I don't think it's just a matter of personal discipline and personal choice. We've started to rebuild a lot of our social and other processes around the internet. So if you're at work, people want you to be connected all the time and checking messages. If you're a young person, your entire social life is often going on Facebook and texting and other social media. So there's this social pressure to be connected and to be constantly monitoring our cell phones or our smartphones or our tablets or whatever. If we value deeper forms of thinking, we have to approach this at both an individual level, changing our habits or modifying our habits, but also at a social level. And I'm not too optimistic that we'll be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Nicholas Carr is my guest this half hour. He's a technology, culture, and economics writer. His work has appeared in numerous publications, The Atlantic, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal. He's coming to Decorah to speak at Luther College on Thursday, February 6th. I'm wondering if, do we know that actually this new form of taking in information, as you've described, actually changes something at the elemental level that's happening in our brain, in our brain chemistry?
Well, there have been some studies, and this is all still, I would call this quite new. And so, you know, all of these kind of brain studies should be taken with a grain of salt until there's a lot of them. But there is some pretty good evidence that our mental functioning, the way our brain functions, changes the more time we spend online, and certainly the more time we spend multitasking with different media. It's much harder to discover whether underneath that there's actual changes in our mm-hmm. you know, neural circuits, in our synaptical connections, and so forth. And one of the reasons it's hard to do that is because there are ethical constraints on how invasive you can be into somebody's mind. So a lot of the evidence about neuroplasticity and brain changes comes from experiments on other primates and other animals. So there's evidence of functional changes, and that would lead to the hypothesis, though I don't think it's proven, that there would be deeper changes as well.
Can you point to a comparable moment in history that this sort of dramatic shift has taken place in the way we take in information?
You know, I think you'd have to go back to a few thousand years ago to the development of writing systems, to the invention of the alphabet, for instance. And, you know, up until then, you couldn't exchange information by writing it down. You just had to do it orally by talking to one another. And certainly that shift was monumental in culture and in our intellectual lives. And I don't know if the internet rises to that level, but I do think it's on that same – we're seeing a change in behavior when it comes to our thinking environment and the way we collect and process information that is kind of at that level. Because it, unlike, say, television, which people watch a lot of television, but traditionally you watched it in certain times of the day, certain moments of your life at night or whatever, with the internet and connected devices, increasingly we carry these around with us all day long, from the second we wake up to the second we go to sleep, and we're constantly interacting with them.
Yes, so, that interacting. What difference does that make? The fact that it's not just one way, as our old three networks and public television system used to deliver to us, but we're actually interacting with websites. We're interacting with people in our neighborhoods, physically neighborhoods, or on the other side of the world. What difference does that make?
Well, it makes a lot of positive difference. There's lots of benefits to being able to engage with other people, particularly ones who aren't in our immediate proximity, and the ability to gather information and also comment on articles and send out tweets and blog posts. So I think there are all sorts of benefits to that interactivity, and that's one of the reasons we crave being online so much. But I also think that it creates deeper involvement, deeper intellectual and mental involvement with the technology itself. And so any negative consequences for diminishing our ability to pay attention, for instance, are going to be also exaggerated by just the intense involvement we have with the screen.
I noticed in your look back at history, you went several thousand years ago to the invention of written languages. I'm a little surprised you didn't go back to the invention of the printing press, Gutenberg. Was that less of a revolution in our communication than what we're experiencing now?
No.
Okay.
I think that was the difference is that the technology of the written word and even the technology of the book was pretty well established when Gutenberg invented the press around 1450 or so. You know, books were around, but they were handwritten. In the big thing that the printing press did was it democratized access to books. So suddenly books were much more plentiful and much cheaper, and that also encouraged the spread of literacy through the world. And so I certainly think that was a monumental shift as well. In fact, you could argue that from that point until very recently, the printed page, and particularly the book, was this kind of central information technology of culture, and it's only been displaced with the arrival of the computer, because even though people still read plenty of books, I think it would be hard to argue that the book is still the central means that people gather information. It's very much the internet and the computer.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how far along you feel we are in this revolution this change? Are we still in the thin end of the wedge, or is there a lot more change to come that we will see rapidly developing, or will we rapidly develop forevermore and be kind of chasing technology throughout our lifetimes?
I don't see any slowdown in the pace of new computer functions and services and so on, and I think we're probably just at the beginning of robot technology and stuff like this. The question I struggle with is, will we continue to design these technologies, whether it's social media or communications technologies or automation technologies, will we continue to design them as we have over the last 20 years, which is designing them to keep us distracted and to keep us glued to the screen, or will people start to say, gee, enough's enough, let's try to design the technologies and the software a little differently so they at some point, you know, encourage us to slow down and think more deeply. And I hope that as a society and as individuals we demand those kind of changes, because it's certainly possible to redesign the technology, but the trend up till now has been very much in the opposite direction.
I wonder, then are you recommending, as part of a way of dealing with this and getting back to deeper contemplation and thought, sort of fasting from media inputs?
I think that can be useful. I guess where I, you know, taking a weekend off or unplugging your internet connection for Sundays or stuff, I certainly think that can be useful, and it fits with my sense that we should be spending more time in more attentive ways of thinking. But I think it's, in some ways, it's also kind of a Band-Aid. It's not dealing with the underlying issue, and I think whenever you start to say, well, let's just take a day off, it's very easy to cheat.
Yeah.
and if we're really going to deal with the situation, it has to be something more than just, oh, let's turn our cell phone off for an hour.
But it could be a very useful exercise. If you've ever done it, you ask yourself, well, what did people do before there were these gadgets around?
Exactly. And whether it's, you know, by choice or because you lose your smartphone or something, it's pretty clear that the initial reaction people have when they're cut off is panic. They're so used to taking in so much information. They're so used to feeling connected to various conversations that they feel like they're left out. And it can actually take a few days. I think the magic number is 3 days until suddenly you say, gosh, maybe all that information I was gathering was kind of trivial, and it's sort of nice to be disconnected and thinking calmly and with some focus.
Mm-hmm. I want you to compare or just address a lamentation that people have about, for instance, letter writing, postcard writing. I wonder, how is that different from writing an email or texting?
It's different in style. And it's not so much that you can't write a long email that kind of replicates the type of letters we used to write all the time, but what seems to happen is that we're constantly shifting to shorter and more frequent bursts of communication, even with friends and family. And there's inevitably something gained that you feel more in touch and more kind of conversational, but there's something lost in terms of the eloquence and sometimes the kind of deep emotional connection that can come through more longer and more considered communication. What that means for our brains, I'm not so sure. What it means for our social lives is that we're trading off frequency of communication in many cases for depth of communication.
And finally, Nicholas Carr, tell us, how have you in your life struck a balance between what's on the screen and real life? We'll just call it real life. Everything's real life, of course.
Right. It's been a constant struggle, and I don't present myself as some model user of the technology, but some things I've done is, for instance, I've decided not to get a smartphone, and I've decided...
You don't have a smartphone?
No.
You have what they call a feature phone without internet access and so forth. You can text, though, right?
Yeah. I think it's called a dumb phone now.
Yes,
I can text, but it's not because I don't realize all the great benefits you get and advantages you get from having a smartphone, but I just know that if I had one, I would kind of become enslaved to it, that I would find it very hard to regulate the flow of information, something that I already find hard to regulate.
But as a person who writes about technology, culture, don't you feel the need to engage in personally in the subject matter that you're writing about?
It may well be that I'll have to find something different to write about because, yes, I mean, for instance, not having a smartphone means that you're not experiencing a lot of the developments in personal software, which are completely aimed, you know, are smartphone apps, and you can't run them on a computer. So, absolutely, there's definitely a sacrifice that's made when you say, I'm not going to adopt this latest technology, but sometimes you have to pay that price.
Nicholas Carr, thank you for joining us. Nicholas Carr, technology, culture, and economics writer whose work has appeared in many publications, including the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and The Atlantic. His latest book was a New York Times bestseller and a 2011 Pulitzer Prize nominee, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. Nicholas Carr will be speaking at Luther College in Decorah Thursday, February 6th. And I want to thank you again, Nicholas, for joining us.
Thanks, Ben. It was my pleasure.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available by going to our website, iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks, and you can contact us anytime with your comments and questions. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Once again, that's River to River at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.